The following previews are of Graphic Audio Productions, rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
The First Mountain Man 2, Blood on the Divide.
Preacher ducked down and took shelter behind one of the wells the men had dug. He looked at the boy holding the hammer's reins.
Stay in the stable, lad. If you can shoot, there's a brace of pistols on the saddle.
You want me to shoot a man?
Forget it! Pilgrims, they're gonna be the death of me yet.
When Preacher chances upon a new settlement, just as the notorious Pardee brothers are about to attack it, a chain of events unfolds that puts the mountain man smack in the middle of a nefarious plot fashioned by human vultures who prey on innocent pilgrims. A plot Preacher will risk his life to destroy.
Get! God damn it! Go on! Ha! Go! Get!
Redborn Pardee and his brothers ran off bloated carrion birds. The birds didn't go far from their snack. They waited and watched patiently. Malachi stood in the middle of the carnage and looked slowly all about him.
Never had a chance. Injun snuck up on him and finished him.
Something's wrong with this. I don't think this was done by Injuns.
How come you say that, Malachi? What else could it have been? Them's arrows, ain't they?
I know they're arrows, Henry. I can see that. But something's mighty wrong here. Mighty wrong. It's just, I can't put my finger on it.
Look at this. Them Injuns, if it was Injuns, was either drunk or it's a setup. A blind man can follow this trail.
Malachi nodded his head in agreement, thinking that he was very grateful to at least have one brother with sense enough to come in out of the rain.
What's all this scribbling on this here paper?
Malachi took the note from the branch and slowly read the words. His mouth dropped wide open. He balled up the note and threw it to the ground, then jumped up and down on it. It had been unsigned, but he knew who wrote it.
Nobody calls me a stupid son of a bitch! God damn that preacher!
Preacher?
Yeah, preacher. He read that note. I know it was him.
Let's don't take no chances, Malachi. Let's call in the whole bunch and take off after him. We try to go this alone, and he'll pick us off one by one.
All right. Put out the call, brother. Sounded long. We got to get him before he gets us.
My name is Sutherland. Mr. Sutherland to you.
Your name might be Sutherland, but it'll be a cold day in hell before I call the likes of you, mister.
This bastard has burned us out and hunted us like wild animals. No more. I've taken all of this I'm going to take.
Dirk rolled from cover and dashed to the timber, running in a zigzag motion. Preacher held his fire and let him come on.
Dirk's right. I'm going up the other side of the hill. Ah!
Preacher put a ball through Lester's brisket that sent him rolling back down the slope. Preacher started a huge rock crashing down the hill. The horse had bolted, running in all directions. The man jumped up and tried to grab the reins of his horse.
Don't miss one thrilling minute of frontier action in The First Mountain Man 2, Blood on the Divide.
What exactly did you whisk me here for, Sir Ian?
Fair enough question. Permit me to answer with one. How would you like to save the world?
At the request of world-famous rock star and global humanitarian Sir Ian Moran, Anya Creed is flown to the jungles of Brazil to seek the secrets of a legendary lost civilization.
We're trying to track down reports that there might be a settlement derived from a quilombo far up the Amazon, which has declined to join Brazil, or perhaps the modern world.
Do you think that's really possible in today's world? With airplanes and satellites and everywhere? Wouldn't it turn up on Google Earth?
We aim to find out.
As Anya's journey takes her up the Amazon and into the nightmare world of the rainforest, the lines between reality and fantasy become more and more blurred, and the denizens of the jungle get more and more dangerous.
Oh, hostile! Open fire! Open fire!
This is a bad place. We better pray your man Moran gets plenty of reinforcements into us pretty quick, like he said he would.
Unwittingly, Anya finds herself embroiled in an international struggle for technology, power, and even immortality. But who is the enemy, and who the ally?
You have been misled, lied to at every turn.
Even now, if you look deep into your heart, you can see the truth.
You've put the power of the ages into these hands.
I have capabilities you've never dreamed of.
So have I, my dear.
Oh!
Rogue Angel Number 8, Secrets of the Slaves.
The danger is real.
Can't breathe.
The threat is vast.
New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Dallas, Washington. We surrender or else millions of Americans die. That's what we face.
The conspiracy spreads.
We have every kind of creep and they're all in on this Hydra operation. With the information they've given us, we have identified bases in Nicaragua and Florida.
And the only thing that can stop it are the combined forces of Able Team, Phoenix Force, and Matt Bolin. Stony Man. Go back to where the legend of Stony Man begins.
See? You got your backup, Carl.
Don't use my name, all right? Standard nicknames, fellas. Politician, gadgets.
And what's your name?
Iron Man. It's time to go to work.
December 2007. And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 3, Absarica Ambush. Narrated by Mort Shelton, with performances by Richard Rowan, Terrence Asifer, Lynette Savard, Ken Jackson, David Coyne, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Graybill, Johann Detweiler, Dan Smith, Kate Torrey, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael Glenn, James Lewis, Karen Carbone, and Michael John Casey. It was still winter in the high country when the man called Preacher packed up his few possessions before pulling out.
Horse, I think you and me have done agreed to a bad deal.
His horse, named Hammer, turned his head and rolled his eyes, as if saying that he didn't have a damn thing to do with any deal Preacher might have made.
All right, stop looking at me that way. I'll make a deal with you. You don't give me no trouble on this run, and with the money I was promised, when we get back, I'll put you out to pasture in a pretty little valley and you can live out the rest of your days with a whole herd of mares. How about that? I'll take that as a yes.
Preacher gathered up the lead rope of his pack horse and swung into the saddle. He pointed Hammer's nose east. Preacher topped a rise and stopped for a moment, knowing he was skylining himself, but not terribly worried about it. Hammer was relaxed. Hammer was a better watchdog than any canine the Preacher had ever seen. If there had been any engines about, Hammer would have let him know. Far as Preacher could figure, he had near about 750 miles to go to the jump-off place in Missouri. And while the government had agreed to pay him more money than he had seen in his whole life, Preacher damn sure had misgivings about this job.
Them out yonder in the Northwest has such a craving for women folk to marry up with. Seems to me like they could do their own fetching instead of handing the job to the government and handing it to me. Shit, horse. I figure I just might retire after this job is over and done. Providing I get it done, that is.
Preacher walked Hammer on down the slope to the valley below.
Government man said there'd be between 125 and 150 women ready to move west across the mountains. Jesus God.
He'd spent all winter trying to figure out a way to hand the job to someone else, but he hadn't come up with anybody he felt was dumb enough to take it. The government man had also said there'd be 50 wagons. Preacher would make a bet it would be more like 75 or 80 wagons.
First thing we gotta do is dress up about half of them women in men's breeches to fool the no-accounts and brigands. And before we pull out, we gotta find out how many of them women know how to shoot and how well. Oh, listen to me. Lord God, I can damn sure get myself into some pickles. And this is about the sourest barrel I ever dropped into.
As soon as the other mountain men within a 200-mile radius had learned of the agreement Preacher had made with the government, they had immediately left the area, knowing the Preacher would be sure to ask them to help out and not wanting any damn part of it.
What they done showed was a whole lot of uncommon good sense. Shitload more than I got. Oh, hell. Come on, Hammer, let's make tracks.
A very uneventful week later, Preacher had put the high lonesome of the Rockies behind him, and he was on to the Hats. He had not seen a living human soul, and that suited him just fine. He angled south for a day, and then once more cut east towards Missouri.
Wonder what year it is. Seems like last year Beartooth said it was 38. So stands to reason this would be 39. Providing Beartooth knew what the hell he was talking about to begin with.
In his mind, Preacher was going over the trail that lay behind him. A trail that some folks had taken to call him the Oregon Trail. But that wasn't official yet. And he was working out in his head the best way to lead these female types with marrying on their mind to the coast. The Indians were getting some worked up about all the people with the sudden urge to move west, and for sure there was going to be trouble with them. Preacher spotted smoke. He hopped off Hammer, ground reined him, and with hawk and rifle in hand, edged up closer for a look-see. Preacher grinned. It was Blackjack Perkins, live and in the flesh. If there was a surlier man anywheres to be found than Blackjack, Preacher didn't know of him. But Blackjack was a man to ride the river with, and if he'd give his word, it was the same as chiseled in stone. Preacher knew Hammer and the pack horse would stay right where he left them, come hell or high winds, so he wasn't worried about them. He began engining up on Blackjack. Blackjack was boiling coffee and frying bacon and stirring up a pot of beans. He had himself a regular feast going. Preacher worked in close, and Blackjack's horses began to get a little skittish. Blackjack cut his eyes toward him, and without giving anything away, the big buckskin-clad bearded mountain man reached for his rifle with one hand, kept on stirring the beans with the other. Preacher grinned and decided the game was up. Blackjack's horses was nearabouts as good at watching as his own. Preacher stayed still on his belly, just in case Blackjack wanted to shoot first and feel sorry about it later.
Oh, steady now, Blackjack. It's me, Preacher.
Show yourself, you damn reprobate. Damnation, Preacher, I'd recognize you anywhere. You be so ugly, you frighten the flight right out of birds. I believe last time I caught a glimpse of you was back in 35 in Horse Creek.
If I was you, I wouldn't be talking none about ugly. Have to tie a pork chop around your neck to get a damn dog to play with you.
Preacher fetched his horses, then sat down to partake of some grub.
You got any salt, Preacher?
I do for a fact.
A run out. Found me a lick a few days ago, but I didn't feel like fighting no puma over it. He'd nailed him a deer, and I never like to disturb no man nor beast whilst they's feasting.
Well, that's right considerate of you, but I'm fixing to disturb you.
You ain't gonna get me to help you lead them petticoats to the coast. You can put that slap out your head bone.
Oh, never entered my mind. How'd you hear about that anyways?
Everybody from the Missouri to the Pacific knows about that. That's why you ain't seen nobody for the past week. Help yourself to some coffee.
Thank you. Yep, for a fact, it's been sort of lonesome.
Gonna get worser, too. 150 or so women heading into the big lonesome? I never heard of such a thing in all my born days. Foolish is what it is.
Yeah, it's gonna be a real challenge, that's a fact. gonna take a real special kind of man to get this done. Most men I know just don't have the sand to do it.
What the hell do you mean by that, Preacher?
Just what I said, Blackjack.
Are you suggesting that I ain't got the wherewithal to see it done?
Oh, now, Blackjack, that hurts. Did you hear me say that?
You better not say it, neither. Eat. Grub's done.
While Preacher was filling his plate, Blackjack eyeballed the pistol strapped around Preacher's waist.
What in hell fires them things? I ain't never seen nothing like that in my life.
Now, they take some getting used to, but once a body gets the hang of them, they give you 8 times the firepower. And I've been practicing, too. I can shuck these out of leather faster than you can blink.
So I heard. You might be on to something with them terrible-looking pistols, Preacher. I heard old Duckworth called you a gunfighter. He was at the fort when you plugged them 3 men last year. Gunfighter. Has a ring to it, don't it?
Well, I got to head past the Mississippi to find me some men with some backbone to help me take them women across.
Easterners? No damn Easterner could find his butt with both hands and a trained dog.
I ain't got no choice in the matter, Blackjack. Appears to me like the men I've been knowing all these years just ain't got the stomach for it. The way they all been running and hiding.
Do you see me running and hiding?
Preacher ducked his head to hide a smile. When he got his face straightened out again, he sat up and gave Blackjack his best sorrowful look.
No, but you said you wasn't going to help me.
Well, mayhaps I got more important things to do.
What? You ain't toting no traps? You don't appear to be hunting gold? Maybe it's true what I heard about you.
What?
That you was going to take up farming.
Farming?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Man told me, said, poor old Blackjack done gone and lost his nerve. That's what he said.
Blackjack was built like a grizzly bear in buckskins, but he weren't no slowpoke. He jumped to his feet in a flash, with the skin of his face that showed above his thick beard turning a right interesting shade of red.
I ain't lost nothing! And by God, you don't have to look no further for a man to help you with them wagons. I'll show you a man who can get them wagons through.
Well, Blackjack, that's plumb kindly of you. I knowed all them rumors wasn't true. But Ned now, I reckon what I heard about him was true.
Ned Mason?
That's him.
I ain't heard nothing about him. Hell, his camp ain't 30 miles from here, over on the Badger. Are you telling me that Ned has lost his nerve?
Yep, that's what I heard.
We can be there this time tomorrow if we leave now.
You ready?
I will be in 5 goddamn minutes.
It didn't take long to find Ned Mason, him being bigger than Blackjack. The man was second cousin to a foothill. After Ned had heard the rumor about his supposed loss of courage, he uprooted a small tree and threw it into the creek. Then he picked up a boulder that would have permeated a lesser man, and it followed the tree. He faced Preacher and Blackjack.
God Almighty! I ain't lost my nerve! Hellfire, Preacher! I've just been waiting for you to ask me to help you with them wagons. I didn't know how to get in touch with you.
Preacher knew that was a total lie, but he didn't let it show on his face.
Well, sure enough, Ned. By the way, what are you doing out this way?
Charlie Burke is supposed to meet me here. He's overdue now. He'll come along.
Don't you think Charlie's a little long in the tooth?
Long in the tooth?
Well, I mean, this is going to be a right arduous trip.
What do arduous mean?
Difficult. This is gonna be a lot of work, and Charlie ain't no young man, you know.
I double too damn dare you to say that to Charlie's face.
Well, don't get mad at me now, old hoss. I'm just repeating what I heard, is all.
Well, there ain't none of it true. It's a damn lie. Come on.
Ned kicked dirt over the fire and began grabbing up a few possessions, tossing them into a pile.
Let's go find Charlie. I know where he is.
Lead on, Ned. Maybe we'll get there before Charlie falls over from old age.
It wasn't long before they found Charlie sitting by his campfire. Now, Charlie Burke was no spring chicken, but neither was he likely to fall over from old age anytime soon. When Ned filled the mountain man in on Preacher's flim-flam story about being old, Charlie jumped up, nearly knocking over his coffee pot.
Old age? If I didn't like you so much, I'd flatten your snoot, you damn whippersnapper. Let's go lead these poor pilgrims across the plains and the mountains.
Now don't get all worked up, Charlie. You liable to have a seizure or something.
Charlie glared at the younger man, and then a slow grin creased his lips. He jerked a thumb back toward Blackjack and Ned.
These boys, they don't know what you're up to, but I do, you conniving horse thief.
What's he up to? What's he talking about, Preacher?
I ain't got no idea, Ned.
Say, what about old Snake?
I thought he was dead.
No, he just looks dead. He's about 10 days older than Water.
You know where he is?
Sure. Got him a cabin about 2 days south of here.
What's Preacher up to, Charlie?
You boys try to figure it out while we ride.
The mountain men rode together to find yet another of their kind. The old mountain man known as Snake, well, he was ancient. He could have been anywhere between 70 and 90. Not even he knew. But what Snake did know was every trail between the Missouri River and the Pacific Ocean. And for his age, he was almighty spry and tough as a boot. He still had enough of his teeth to gnaw with and was no man to try to push around. Snake would either cut you or shoot you faster than a striking rattler.
I ain't never in my life been around 150 females. I ain't right sure I want to be now. But you boys is friends, and a friend is a valuable thing. So count me in.
They were gone within the hour, heading east toward what would someday be called Kansas. Days later, they rode into a sea of waving grass and rolling hills and hostile engines. And the men knew they were very likely to run into any number of tribes. Kiowa, Comanche, Pawnee, Osage, Shawnee, Arapaho, Wichita, and Kansas. None of whom would be terribly thrilled to see 100 wagons come lumbering across their land. The men set up camp carefully. Charlie put coffee to boil over a hat-sized fire.
Been years since I've been this far east. 10 years at least.
Longer than that for me. I had me a running battle with a war party of young bucks not too far from right where we sitting. That must have been, 1820 or so. I think there was a raiding party from down south that had just got whooped, and they decided to take it out on me. They fought me pretty good, and I still got a piece of arrowhead in my back from that skirmish. They chased me for miles, but my good horse carried me safe. I finally lost him up past the Little Beaver.
What tribe?
I never knowed. I gleamed right off that they didn't appear to be in no mood for genteel conversation. As a matter of fact, they was right unfriendly.
Blackjack poked the fire with a stick, a thoughtful look on his face.
Preacher, there ain't no way the five of us is going to be near enough. Have you give that any thought?
Practically every hour on the hour. I'm hoping there'll be some old boys we know around the staging area that'll be willing to throw in with us.
And if they ain't?
Well, we hire some pilgrims, I reckon.
Snake dumped cold water into the coffee pot to settle the grounds and shook his head.
We're gonna need at least 12 to 15 more men to see to the needs of all these heifers, and that ain't taking into consideration them that might feel the need for some servicing. That's gonna create problems, Preacher.
I've been giving that some thought, too. I'm just gonna have to lay the law down to the men and the ladies. I can't keep men and women from doing what comes natural, but I can damn sure warn them that something like that could tear this wagon train apart. Well, we got about 300 miles to go before we have to do much worrying. I think this is the first week in March. We're supposed to be there in 3 weeks, give or take a day or two. I figure a week or 10 days to sort things out and hire men. Then, boys, our trouble really begins.
Preacher's eyes narrowed as Hammer's ears pricked up.
Look sharp. We got cover.
The men picked up rifles and took positions. Charlie squinted at the approaching men and stood up.
Well, relax. It's Ring and Steele's pony.
No one knew if Ring was the man's first or last name, or even if it was the name he was born with. He had hair so blonde it bleached out nearly white in the summer, but his skin tanned instead of burning like some of them other white folks. His green eyes stood out like tree frogs on a mud flat. Ring, when barely more than a boy, had come west about the same time as Preacher and had grown into a man full of good humor and with a reckless streak. Steele's pony was a Delaware Indian who had been taken in as a child by a white family and educated in towns until he was about 13. Then he said to hell with it, took off for the far western mountains, rode his hair back out into shining black braids, and never looked back. He was the finest horse thief preacher had ever seen, and he had a wicked sense of humor. Usually, if you found one of the men, the other couldn't be too far off. The two men approached camp and dismounted, picking in their horses with the others.
What the hell are you two doing coming in from the north?
Running from the goddamn Pawnee.
Yeah, but I think we lost them.
What do you mean you think, Rain?
The two men gratefully sat down by the fire and accepted cups of hot black coffee from Snake.
They might show up. I told Ring not to mess around with that girl. She was the chief's favorite daughter.
I can't help it. If I'm so handsome, women just naturally throw themselves at me.
The girl's name was Stands Like Dog. That ought to tell you something about how attractive she was.
How many Pawnee we talking?
Oh, about 50 or so.
50?
How far behind you, and how long have they been chasing you?
They've been chasing us for a week, and I think they're about 2 hours behind us.
Damn, let's get...
10 minutes later, the mountain men were moving east at a gallop. The days passed as the men left the rolling sea of grass, the endlessly blowing wind, and entered the Flint Hills section of what would someday be called Kansas. That gave way to the rolling hills and forested eastern one-third of the region.
Hey, preacher, it's town we're supposed to meet the wagons at. How big you reckon 'tis?
I've told about 500 or so people live there.
Oh, 500? Oh, why?
I sure can't give you no answer to that, Snake. Takes all kinds to make up this old world, I reckon.
Fools! I lived like that for years in my youth. All jammed up like pickles in a barrel. No good way to live.
No siree. I don't know how you stood it, Pony.
The same man who had approached Preacher with the envelope from President Van Buren last fall was waiting for him on the trail, accompanied by a half dozen other men, who, while dressed in civilian clothing, all bore the stamp of cavalrymen. Those men stared open-mouthed at the seven mountain men. Even though they had bathed and either shaved clean or trimmed their beards and mustaches, they were still a wild-looking bunch. Faces burned dark by years of sun and wind, hats that had lost their shape months ago. All carried at least two pistols at their waist, and four or five more hung on their saddles, in addition to at least one rifle which they carried across the saddle horn, and another rifle in a boot. Each man carried at least one war axe and a long-bladed knife, either in a sheath or jammed behind a waist sash. They all had bows and quivers of arrows on their pack animals.
Howdy, Mr. Government Man. I'm here like I said I'd be. Where's all the females?
In Missouri. Just a few miles away. I take it these are to be your assistants?
Hell no, they ain't my assistants. I brung them along because they're first-class fighting men, hunters, scouts, trailblazers, liars, drunkards, and car cheats. Also trust them with my life, and the man can't say that about very many other folks. I told them what this here job would pay, and they agreed to that. If you don't, we all just gotta get back in the saddle and head west, and you can push this gaggle of hens to the coast yourself.
Oh, I'm sure the sum is agreeable, Preacher. As I told you last fall, I would leave that entirely up to you. I've taken the liberty of hiring on a dozen or so other men, subject to your approval, of course.
Let's go look this mess over.
Preacher turned toward his horse. A hand fell on his shoulder and spun him around. Preacher faced a young man who carried himself like some army officers Preacher had known over the years. Very arrogant ones.
Get your goddamn hands off me, pup.
I take exception to your surly attitude and your very cavalier approach to this important historical undertaking, sir.
I'm gonna tell you one more time, sonny boy. Get your goddamn hand off me.
I am Lieutenant Rupert Worthington, sir, United States Army. I will be in command of the small detachment of troops accompanying this train. All in civilian clothing for obvious reasons, at least to those of us with some formal education. I might have to explain that to you and your assistants, but one thing we shall straighten out for us right now, you will take orders.
Preacher hit Worthington with a left that crossed the lieutenant's eyes and dumped him on the ground, right on his U.S. Army butt. Preacher turned away and stepped back into the saddle. The president's man's eyes were amused. Preacher looked down at the young officer, being helped to his feet by two of his men.
Now I figure, boy, that you just get out of some sort of highfalutin military school and you're still pretty wet behind the ears. I also figure you ain't never heard a shot fired in anger. And I figure, too, that you got all sorts of ideas about fair play and rules of war and that sort of crap. Well, you can just leave them here. They don't work in the wilderness. And don't you ever speak down to me again, young feller. Not to me, not to none of us. Mayhap we don't have no fancy degree from some university, but what we do have is about 300 years of combined experience in staying alive in hostile country. When one of us tells you the trail is wrong, you leave it. When we say don't drink the water, you don't drink the goddamn water. And when one of us tells you to get ready for an engine attack, you damn well better get ready. You do that, you just might stay alive out here.
Preacher and the others rode off at a trot. Worthington glared after the man while one of his men held the dampened handkerchief to his swelling jaw. He slapped the hand away.
Savage!
Son, Preacher might be wild and woolly and uncouraged, but he and those men with him opened up this country. Neither you nor I can even come close to understanding the hardships and mind-numbing deprivations they have stoically endured over the years. There is no law past this point, Lieutenant, none except what powder and shot the individual carries with him. There are no courts of law. You don't know the breed of men called Mountain Man, and I scarcely know much about them. But I do know this. Crowd them, and they'll hurt you. The best advice I can give you all is to keep your mouths shut and your ears wide open.
The President's man swung into the saddle and rode after Preacher.
It's going to be a very interesting journey.
Sergeant Scott, did I ask you to predict the future?
No, sir.
Then don't!
Preacher and his friend sat their horses in a line on a ridge and stared open-mouthed at the scene below them. None of them had ever seen anything like it. Before them were more women than any of the men had ever seen gathered in one place.
I think that I would rather be somewhere else.
Well, you ain't, but I do know what you're talking about.
There must be 1,000 females down yonder.
135, with 15 more due in sometime today or tomorrow.
How many wagons?
65.
God have mercy on us all.
There is a female journalist among the ladies, coming along to chronicle the event.
A female witchalist to do what?
A writer to keep a diary.
Oh, why?
It will be printed in newspapers back east. You gentlemen are about to be famous.
Oh, hot diggity damn. Stay here, boys. I'm gonna go down there.
You be careful, Preacher. Them females look man-hungry to me. They grab you, you disappear amongst all them petticoats and paint and powder, and they'll wear you down to a shatter. There won't be enough of you left to bury.
You want me to tie you into the saddle?
Now, gentlemen, those are ladies down there. They were carefully chosen from hundreds of applicants. Many of those ladies come from fine, old, respectable families.
And some of them are bound to have come from whorehouses, but that don't make no difference to me. I got to eyeball them all close up.
I'll pray for you.
Snake looked at Blackjack, his eyes bugged out in surprise.
You pray?
I prayed plenty when them goddamn Utes had me back to 31, you bet on that.
Lieutenant Worthington and his detachment rode up.
You probably antagonize them, sir. I was taught that the Utes were very friendly towards a white man.
You sure got a lot to learn, sonny boy. Utes is like any other Injun tribe. They're all notional. Some good, some bad. But an Injun don't think like so-called civilized white folks do. You been around many Injuns, sonny?
I have studied them extensively.
Hooey, I feel safer already.
Get up, horse.
Preacher left the men and rode down the ridge, walking Hammer up to a group of women. The women stared at him, none of them ever having seen anything quite like Preacher before. They stared at each other with mutual amazement, and it attracted attention. Soon there were women of all descriptions, sizes, and shapes surrounding Preacher. Even Hammer got a little nervous. Some of the ladies were beautiful. Others were so ugly they could stop a rampage and herd a buffalo with one look. There were ladies who were slim and trim, and others of more than considerable heft. But Preacher was looking for the boss lady. He knew there had to be one, or two.
You there, up
down that wild-eyed looking horse.
Preacher cut his eyes to a tall and full-figured female all decked out in a black dress. She was coming striding through the crowd of women, and they were parting like she was Moses and they was the Red Sea. The woman wasn't no real looker, but she had her a commanding manner that Preacher liked, and he knew he'd found one of the ramrods of the petticoat train for sure. Hammer turned his head to stare at the woman, and Preacher tightened up on the reins. If Hammer didn't like somebody, he didn't draw any distinctions about gender. He'd just as soon bite or kick a woman as he would a man. She stopped back enough not to set Hammer off, staring up at Preacher with her hands on her hips.
Are you the famous mountain man everybody's been bragging about? The one who is going to lead us across the wilderness?
I don't know about famous, lady, but I'll get most of you across to the blue waters.
My name is Eudora Hempstead. And what do you mean by most of you?
I mean that not all of you ladies is going to make it. And the whole kit and caboodle, you damn well better understand that now. Now gather round. Gather round here and listen to what I got to say. But stay out of biting and kicking distance from Hammer here. He's like me. He ain't the most cordial thing in the world. Now listen up. Some of you will eventually want to quit and try to find your way back. But you're not going to make it back. Injuns will grab you and tote you back to their camp. That is, if you don't give them too much trouble. You aggravate them, and they'll just rape you, kill you, and scalp you where you happen to be. And if they make slaves of you, well, that ain't such a terrible life. They'll work you hard and only beat you occasional. Now, some of you are going to die out yonder on the trail from stupid fool accidents, engine attacks, snake bite, hydrophobic skunks, drowning. One or two of you are going to go crazy in the head and wander off and get ate up by a bear. And don't think I'm funning you, because I ain't. I'm just telling you like it is.
A group of men had gathered around at the edge of the crowd of women. Preacher figured they were the ones the president's man had hired. Preacher picked out two that he was going to unhire right off the bat. One he knew slightly, and the other had a shifted look to him. He pointed at the one he knew.
You, Jack Hayes, get gone from here and take that ratty-eyed friend of yours with you.
I wasn't hired by you, Preacher.
No, but you're getting fired by me. Now hit the trail. If I see you in an hour, I'll either shoot you or stomp you. Move it.
Jack and his buddy left, but from the look in their eyes, Preacher sensed he had not seen the last of them. The women watched, wide-eyed, as the men left. They looked back at Preacher nervously.
Jack Hayes is a murderer and a thief. He's born back in Virginia.
He told us his name was Wilbert Dunlap.
That proves he's a liar, too.
We only have your word for that, Mr. Preacher, whatever your name is.
Preach will do. Who you be?
Faith Crump. I am a journalist.
And a damn pretty one, too. Red-headed and green-eyed. A shape that caused young men to act silly and old men to weep in remembrance of better days. Them duds she had on was hand-sewn for, and fine material they was, too. Preacher knew a little something about ladies and their clothes. Eudora stepped close and whacked Preacher on the leg, startling him.
Ha! Well, I like you, Mr. Mountain Man. You don't priss around and honeycoat your words. I like that in a person. But don't you get the wrong idea about me. My man's waiting for me by the blue waters. You lead and we'll follow, right, ladies? Hip, hip, hooray!
Hammer just about came unhinged. Preacher had to fight to keep hold on the reins. The president's man came to the rescue.
There will be a meeting right after lunch tomorrow afternoon, ladies. Any and all questions will be answered then. Shall we go, Preacher?
With pleasure.
We'll be putting you and your friends up at a fine inn.
Like hell you will. Feather ticks are always too soft and the rooms are too damn small. Me and the boys will just sleep out under the stars.
Later that afternoon, Preacher went strolling amid the wagons and the women. There were some kids, but not many, something that Preacher was profoundly grateful for. He smiled to the women as he walked, but he didn't stop to talk. That would come in a day or two. He wanted to personally talk with every female there, to spot the strong as well as the weak. Suddenly, Faith Crump was at his side, tablet and pencils at hand.
So what do you think about this venture, Mr. Preacher?
I ain't paid to think, lady. I'm paid to get you people through.
Do you always carry that big gun wherever you go?
Yeah.
Why?
Because if I run into Jack Hayes, I might take a notion to shoot him.
Why don't you leave Mr. Hayes to the proper authorities?
Oh, what proper authorities, lady? He's been loose and free for years after all the bad he'd done back east. Don't seem to me like anybody's doing anything to grab him and string him up. Yeah, this is the last chance for anybody to do something legal-like. Now, just a few miles yonder west, Missy, the laws that you live under stop. For hundreds of miles, the only law is that which a man carries in his heart and mind, what comes out of the barrel of a gun. Now, Missy, you ain't seen nothing like what you're fixing to see in a few days. None of you have. Y'all thinking this is some sort of grand adventure, but I'm going to tell you what it is right now. It's dirt and sweat and pain and grief. It's being so tired you can't even think. It's pushing and tugging and heaving and jerking till your hands bleed. You ever seen a person die, Missy? No, huh? I thought not. You're going to. You're going to see painted up Indians who don't like people coming through lands they've been calling their own for hundreds of years. You folks back east now, you think the Indian is dumb and savage. He ain't dumb. Far from it. He's got a way of life that suits him just fine, and he's prepared to fight and die to keep it that way. And who are we to say that he's wrong and we're right? You better stock up on writing tablets and quills and ink, Missy, because you're going to have a lot to write about. And you all had better reach deep down inside of you and find all the strength you can muster up, because you're damn sure going to need it.
Preacher shook his head at all the wide-eyed stares. He turned and walked away from the group.
He's just trying to scare us off this journey.
No, he isn't. I think we've finally found a person who is telling it straight. And I think we all had better remember every word.
Nonsense! The man is no more than an uneducated lout and a bully.
Eudora looked at the fast-fading back of Preacher striding through the camp. She was thoughtful for a moment. She came from a long line of seafaring stock and was quite familiar with that type of man. She knew that while they were among the best at spinning tall tales and great yarns, when they became serious, it behooved a body to listen and pay some close attention.
Gales are going to blow, and the seas will be running high before we finally make port.
Beg pardon?
Nothing, Faith. Nothing at all.
On the morning of the second day, Preacher and the other mountain men eyeballed the 10 men who'd volunteered to accompany the wagon train to the coast. There had been 14 originally. Preacher had now kicked out Jack Hayes and 3 others. There'd be 8 soldier boys, including Sergeant Scott and Lieutenant Worthington. Bad thing about it was that none of the men had ever been more than a few miles past the Missouri line, and there weren't an engine fighter in the lot.
Blackjack, get him outfitted. Plenty of powder and shot and spare molds. I done looked over the spare mounts. They'll do. You boys take a look at them, too. See what you think. I gotta go see, what the hell is that damn feller's name from Washington?
He never said.
Yeah, he's smart. This thing goes bad, nobody can blame him. All right, I'll see you boys this afternoon at the meeting.
Preacher went into town in search of the mysterious man from Washington and found him at a pub having a drink of whiskey. He was sitting alone at a corner table, just him and a jug. Preacher fetched a cup from the bar and joined him. Without even being asked, the man reached over and poured some whiskey into Preacher's cup.
You lay in the britches in church like I told you?
That I did, and I approve of your plan, but whether the ladies will remains to be seen.
I ain't gonna have nothing to say about it. Now, after we pull out, am I gonna see you again?
Doubtful. Your money will be waiting on the coast. This venture is backed by the government of the United States, and there are payment-on-demand vouchers in there. Open it and look for yourself if you doubt my word.
I don't have to do that, because if I get out there and find out that you cheated me, I'm going to track you through the gates of hell and kill you personal.
I'm fully aware of that, Arthur.
Arthur, huh? You done some checking up on me, did you?
As much as we could. We had to be sure you were the right man for this assignment. You are. Your parents are alive and very well and living comfortably in retirement. They have moved up into southern Ohio, near your mother's relatives. You have several brothers and sisters still living. They didn't seem to be particularly interested in your whereabouts or well-being.
I left home when I was about the size of a tadpole, mister. I wouldn't know none of them if they was to walk through the door right now. They went their ways, I went mine.
You haven't communicated with them at all over the long years?
Nope. Well, that ain't rightly true. I posted a letter to my mom and pa some years back. I never knowed if it got through to them. Then I heard they'd died. Sort of lost interest in going back after that.
They know you are alive and doing well, and they've been reading about you.
They are both very proud of you.
Well, maybe I'll go back east after this is over and visit with them some. Might be the last chance I'll ever get. They sure as hell ain't getting no younger. You gonna be here when we pull out?
Oh, yes. I shall leave for the east as soon as I see you off. Well, shall we drink to the success of this journey?
Why not? You gonna be at the meeting this afternoon?
Oh, yes, I'll be there. You might get some questions thrown at you that you can't answer. That'll be my job.
Snake stuck his head inside the tavern.
There's some yahoo in town looking for you, Preacher. Says you killed a friend of his'n last year, and he's gonna pin your ears back.
You got a name?
Didn't say, but he's sure enough big'un.
Okay. You want to come along, Mr. Man?
The man from Washington smiled. His face is open and as untroubled as the sweet summer sky.
I hate violence.
Somehow I doubt that, friend. I surely do.
As Preacher stepped out of the tavern, he almost knocked Faith Crump off the step. He grabbed her just in time, or she would have landed on her bustle in the muddy street.
Please release me, sir.
Missy, what in the hell are you doing hanging around a place like this?
I wanted a sip of whiskey. That's what in the hell I'm doing.
Well, when you can't go in no tavern, that ain't no fitting place for a lady.
Who says I can't?
Well, it's a law, I think.
And who makes the laws?
Men does.
Men have no right to tell a woman what she can or cannot do.
Oh, the hell you say. And a woman ain't supposed to partake of strong drink, neither.
Who says so?
I don't know who says so. It just ain't right.
Well, I think it would be perfectly all right if I want to do it.
Good Lord, lady. I ain't got the time to stand here and argue this dumbass stuck with you. I gotta go hunt up a man and whoop up on his head some.
What?
You there! Preacher!
A man stood across the muddy and rutted street. Preacher turned and faced him across the expanse. He didn't think he'd ever seen the fellow before. But Snake had sure been right. This guy was big for a fact.
You know him, Preacher?
I don't think so. What the hell do you want?
To put some knots on your head, Preacher!
Why?
'Cause you killed a friend of mine up in the mountains last year. He was riding with the party.
He deserved killing then.
The hell you say, you no good turd-eating horse's dick.
A crowd began to gather on both sides of the street. A man with a large badge pinned to his shirt came running up.
Here now, I won't have any of this in my town.
Shut your mouth and get out of my way before you get yourself hurt accidental. This ain't none of your affair.
The town marshal stood with his mouth hanging open. Such an affront to his authority.
You have a name or are you all mouth?
Tom Gushing, you mangy bastard!
Somebody call the police!
I'm the police!
Well, stop them!
Marshal, sir, you go in the tavern there, have yourself a drink on me, and just stay the hell out of this. I stomp on my own rats.
Preacher handed Snake his hawk and rifle, and he and Tom Gushing started across the street toward each other.
Guns or fists, Preacher, it don't make a damn bit of difference to me.
Good.
Preacher landed a right fist to Tom's jaw that sent the taller and heavier man slopping into the mud flat on his back.
Stop them! Stop them!
Eudora Hempstead walked up to see what all the shouting was about.
Tear his mainsail down, Preacher! But watch that port fist, he's a lefty!
Other ladies from the wagon train gathered, most of them standing silent. Some of them smiling, though, ready to enjoy a good fight. Preacher let Tom get to his feet, and the big man charged. Preacher sidestepped and stuck out a foot, tripping the man.
You like that mud, Picky?
Gushing struggled to his feet, covered head to toe with mud.
Stand still and fight like a man!
All right.
Town marshal pulled out a huge pistol and waved it in the air.
I command you both to stop in the name of the law.
Oh, hell, Matthew. Put that damn thing away and let him fight. I haven't seen a good fight in a month or more.
All right, then, to hell with it.
Matthew stowed his pistol. He walked into the tavern and took a seat by the window. Tom Gushing again got to his feet and stood swaying, glaring at the preacher. The man had lost his pistols while wallowing around in the mud. He suddenly spread wide both arms like a bear. Preacher jumped to one side and slammed a fist against the side of Tom's head. Preacher hit him with a fast combination of blows to the belly and face. Tom went down to his knees. Preacher stepped forward, grabbed Tom's head with both hands, and slammed a knee into the man's face.
Magnificent, mate!
It's over. You called me out and I came. It's over.
I'll kill you, you son of a bitch. We'll meet again, and when we do, I'll leave you for the ants and the buzzards.
You best just go on back to where you come from and forget it. I was just playing with you this time around. If there ever is a next time, you're gonna find out the playtime is all over.
Faith looked disgusted. Preacher scraped the mud off of his moccasins and leggings. Snake handed him back his hawking.
Write this here little fracas down in your journal, Missy.
You brute!
I think she's taking a shine to you, Preacher.
Oh!
Faith tossed her head and flounced off toward the encampment. Preacher eyeballed her as she left, and a slow grin spread across his face. At the meeting that night, Preacher found himself standing on the lowered tailgate of a wagon and looking out over the sea of females. Faith Crump and Eudora Hempstead were in the front row.
The man who put all this together tells me you all know how to hitch up a team and handle the reins. For them of you who chose mules and them the preferred oxen, you'd best know what to do with a yoke and a prodding stick. You goddamn well better know. I ain't running no baby school here. I'll let you all know how I feel about this mess right off. I personally think it's probably the most ignorant plan that was ever conceived, but I give my word that I'd see it through in a will.
Preacher looked out onto the bonneted heads of the ladies. Beneath the bonnets were grim and determined faces, showing some fear. But that was good, Preacher thought. When a body stops being afraid of the wilderness, the next move is death. Lieutenant Worthington stood at the back and kept bouncing up on the balls of his feet.
Me and the men I brung with me will personally go over every wagon and every animal, commencing right after this meeting. And it's going to be a short one, you can bet on that. And I don't mind telling you the reasons why, too, because I could stand up here and talk about the wilderness and the plains till I fell over and the words wouldn't mean shit to you all until you see and taste it for yourselves. So there ain't no point in asking a bunch of damn fool questions. The trail will answer them soon enough, believe you me. Now, ladies, I ain't trying to be difficult, and I don't mean to belittle y'all's heading west. Some folks say the country needs settling. I got mixed feelings about that. Howsomever, it ain't up to me to make them decisions. My job is to get as many of you through as I possible can. And we're going to pull out 3 days from now. We're going to travel for 2 days, then we'll have us some rifle and pistol practice for a couple of days.
Worthington waved from the back, sort of hopping in place like he had ants in his pants.
Yeah, that's right, ladies. Because when the Indians attack, and they will attack, y'all got to fight right alongside us men, and you got to know how to load and fire. Now, I've laid in ample stocks of lead and powder and molds for the balls. When I'm satisfied that y'all can more or less hit what you're aiming at, we'll stretch out for a week. Then we'll stop, do some shuffling around. By that time, you ladies will have had some squabbles and made friends and made enemies, and you'll know who you want to travel with for the next 4 or 5 months. Now, I want all of y'all to get back to your wagons for inspection. Right now! Come on, come on, come on! Haul your bustle!
Preacher hopped down from the tailgate, coming face to face with Lieutenant Worthington.
I was trying to get your attention.
I seen you out there hopping up and down like a bee-stung bear. I figured you had to pee the way you was acting.
Now see here, Preacher. I represent the United States Army.
Well, I got to go, boy. I got wagons to inspect. Go sharpen your saber or something. We'll talk after we stretch him out. I can't figure no way I can avoid this.
Preacher left Worthington standing with his mouth wide open. It was the evening before the wagons would roll out from the last large pocket of civilization for hundreds of miles. The men were lounging around a fire, drinking coffee and talking. All the men were there, including Lieutenant Worthington and his small troop. Of the civilians hired to accompany the wagons, there was Nick, Sam, Jake, Dan, Frank, Barnaby, Teal, Gabe, Hugh, and Upton. They ranged in age from about 40 to 50. Preacher had wanted no young studs along, not with this many females. There would sure have been some trouble with young men along.
They look pretty good to me.
Yeah, they do, Blackjack. 25 men and 150-odd women.
setting out to do something that ain't never been done before. You think the history books will write about this 100 years from now?
Shit, Ned. What difference will it make to us then? We won't be nothing but dust in the ground. Providing we're lucky enough to get a proper burial, that is.
Charlie, you do have a point. Rupert, what do you think?
Why, yes. I do believe history will record this journey. After all, we do have Miss Crump along, and I'm bursting with excitement myself at just the thought of it. It's going to be quite the grand adventure indeed.
Now, the mountain men had decided to try to be as nice to the young lieutenant as possible, so they hid their smiles and didn't look at one another after that last remark.
Well, Rupert, you're damn sure right about that.
Uh-huh. Rupert got up to go check on something or the other. He was always checking on something or the other and writing things down in a book. He left with his men with him. Steele's pony shook his head and sipped his coffee. Ring gave Preacher a sideways glance.
A grand adventure.
Yeah. Whew. They all say that when they're starting out.
Preacher had gone over the supplies, not just a list of what every wagon called Prairie Schooner should contain, but personally checking over each wagon's contents. On foodstuffs, he checked everything from eggs and molasses to sugar and hardtack. He made certain the wagons contained extra augers, shovels, oxbows, linchpins, and gimlets. He ordered the man from Washington to provide additional wagons and drivers. The extra wagons containing barrels of axle grease, spare ox yokes, tents and blankets, powder and shot, hammers and nails, and rope and trading goods to placate the engines. Oscar, Sid, and Felix were the new drivers, all seasoned hands with reins. The day before they pulled out, starting well before dawn, Preacher rousted out the sleepy-eyed women and went through each wagon with a fast but unrelenting vengeance, ordering heavy chested drawers, iron stoves, and huge grandfather clocks to be left behind. That move did not endear him to the hearts of some of the women, but he told the ladies to either get rid of the crap or stay behind. They all got rid of it. The wagons were all new and well made of hardwoods, each wagon 4 feet wide by 12 feet long, and carried spare canvas and spare parts such as iron tires, spokes, and tongues. If there was anything Preacher missed, he damn sure didn't know what it was.
All right, ladies, I know it ain't barely day yet, but it's time to move. Let's stretch them out.
Come out tonight, come out tonight, come out tonight. Buffalo gals won't come out tonight and dance by the light.
Yeah!
Shut up.
Worthington, shut up. Preacher rode up to the lead wagon, driven by Eudora Hempstead and Cornelia Bigler. The third person in the bed of the wagon was a woman named Anne. In spite of his misgivings, Preacher smiled at the grin he could see on Eudora's face by the first rays of dawn.
We have a fair wind blowing, Eudora.
She'll puff the mainsails and move us right along, Captain.
You excited?
I'd be telling a whopper if I said no.
I'll set an easy pace for the next 2 days. That'll work the kinks out and settle everybody in. I don't figure to make more than 20 miles before we stop for some rifle and pistol practice. That close to the fort, I don't expect any engine trouble, but you just never know.
With a nod, Preacher rode on, lingering occasionally to talk to the ladies on the wagon seat. Faith Crump was riding with Gail Hawkins and a lady named Wallace.
This is a barbaric hour, Preacher. Why, the sun is barely even up.
It'll rise. It always does.
Over the past few days, Preacher had learned from the president's man that Faith came from a very wealthy family. Her father owned ships, railroads, newspapers, banks, and the like. And that Faith was known as a very headstrong, opinionated, and outspoken young lady. Her father had agreed to her coming on this trip just to get her out of the house and give him some relief. Faith had started her own monthly magazine back east, and she was very strong in the fledgling women's right to vote movement. She and many of her friends and co-workers had been arrested several times for bellying up to the bar and demanding service. Various saloons in Boston, New York City, and Philadelphia. Faith had also been arrested once for telling the mayor of New York City to go suck an egg.
Lash that canvas down tighter on the left side. Secure it, Maud. Come on now. There's wind out on the plains that you won't believe. Oh,
Christ. You just can't drive oxen sitting on the damn wagon seat, Orabella. Get out here and walk. You know better.
As the eastern sky grew brighter and brighter, Preacher rode back to the head of the column and caught up to Charlie.
Scouts out?
Snake and Blackjack left an hour ago, Preacher.
Preacher sat his saddle on the south side of the train and watched it pass. Because of the mixture of oxen and mules, he figured on any good day of doing no more than 12 miles. Mules could do 20, but oxen averaged 15, so he split the difference. When conditions worsened, either on the trail or because of bad weather, they'd be lucky to do 8 in a day. It was a nearly 2,000-mile trip, 5.5 months any way you wanted to cut it. For 2 days, the wagons rolled, from first light to 1 hour before the sun set. Preacher set an easy pace, and at the end of the second day, figured they had covered about 25 miles. They had seen no other human beings except their companions on the wagon train. Preacher let the women sleep late the next morning, until 7 a.m. After breakfast, he pointed to a wagon he'd pulled in close.
Men's breeches, men's shirts, and men's hats. From this point on, half of you are going to be dressed like men.
Hot damn! We're throwing convention to the wind, and to hell with what other people think.
Well, that's for me.
Surprised at the outright glee exhibited by the women folk, Preacher just walked back to the others and left them to it.
Well, I'll just be damned. How do a man ever figure a woman, Snake?
You don't. Don't ever try to second guess no female person. It can't be done. My daddy told me that night before I left home, and he sure was right.
Eudora took charge and began assigning clothes to the ladies. None of them argued with her, and Preacher knew he'd made a wise choice in naming her wagon boss. She came back around the wagon in men's duds. Sure didn't hurt her figure any. She waved Preacher over.
Captain!
Wagon boss?
We can't have the make-believe men wearing long curls. How about we whack them off? It'll all grow back by the time we get to the Blue Waters.
Good idea. But save the curls and time in the barrels of your rifle so the Injuns will think it's scalps.
I do like the way you think, Captain. If I wasn't bespoken for, you'd be in trouble.
You right sure that feller we're waiting for you is man enough to handle you?
If he isn't, you better keep a sharp eye out on the seas behind you, Captain.
Carry on, wagon boss. Carry on.
Got deadly serious in a few hours when Preacher lined them all up for weapons practice. It turned out that about half the women had come from towns and cities and had no idea how to handle any type of weapon.
Holy shit. I think we're gonna be here longer than we thought. Some of them gals don't even know which end the ball comes out of.
Well, we've brung more than ample shot and powder. Let's get to it. For God's sake, let's don't have no one blowing somebody else's head off accidentally.
The wagon train stayed where it was for 3 days. Some of the ladies took to the guns like they was born to it. Others, even after 3 days of practice, couldn't hit a barn if they was standing inside. Preacher and the other men decided that just about a third of the women would handle the guns. The rest would reload and stand by to put out fires caused by fire arrows, tend to the kids, livestock, and in case of engine attack, the wounded, which the mountain men knew was going to happen somewhere up the line. The door, to no one's surprise, turned out to be a crack shot. Faith couldn't hit a bull in the ass with a baseball.
All right, hold up. Ain't no point in wasting no more shot and powder. We pull out in the morning.
A dozen or so women had gathered around him. The Preacher squatted down and brushed a grassless area clean with his hand. With a stick, he started a rough map.
All right, looky here, ladies. A couple more days on the trail, we head northwest. We'll cross to Kansas, keep heading north by northwest until we reach the Platte. And we'll follow that on the south side of it till we reach the South Platte. We're going to cross that and follow the North Platte till we reach this trading post here. That some is calling the taking of Fort Laramie. From there, we follow the Sweetwater to South Pass, then south to another trading post. And from there, we cross the Tetons up to a Hudson's Bay Company post on the Snake. Next stop is a trading post here on the Boise, providing the Injuns ain't killed everybody and burned the damn place down, which is what they've done more than once. And then, we're going to head north through the Blues up to the Whitman Mission, then west following the Columbia over to the Dalles.
Past that, we're home free. Y'all can hitch up with your men, live happily ever after. Looks easy, don't it?
He smiled up at him, but the women, including Eudora and Faith, did not return his smile. Even after only 20 or so miles, most of the women had discovered that this journey was going to be rough. The women got their first taste of river crossing at the Kansas. It was running slightly high due to spring rain, and the crossing was rough for a few very wet. Some of the women fell off the wagons and right into the drink. Steele's pony rode up to where Preacher was watching the chaos.
What the hell are you doing, Preacher? There is fine crossing only a few miles south of here.
Yeah, I know it, but I want any quitters to start hollering now, while they can give it up and still get back to Missouri.
But we'll have to cross the Soldier and the Vermilion on this route.
Damn sure will. I want to shake down this train right off. If they can all stick it out over the next few days, we'll know what we got.
You're a hard man, Preacher. But I see why you're doing this. I better get over there and help with the ropes.
Whoa, like hell you will. This crossing ain't nothing. The water ain't even hub deep. Now you let the women handle it. We showed them how, now it's up to them. I want their muscles hardened up whilst we're still in more or less friendly country. You boys ain't never seen no mountains like we're gonna have to cross. I want these women tough before we hit them.